in that regard. So things I would look for were enthusiasm to turn out among the respective parties, the ability for the respective parties to raise money to support their particular candidate, particularly in purple districts and purple states. For instance, California has 14 Republican congressional members. Of the 14, at this point, it looks like about 7 of them will be targeted by the Democrats. Now, they're going to be targeted in California more so than most places because the tax bill that apparently is going to be signed in the next few days will be more injurious to voters in more heavily taxed states such as ours is. And there are several of these members of Congress, the Republicans, who are in some kind of difficulty with even their previous election. I'll give you examples of that. I'll just read off the names, but people don't have to really know who they are. But Jeff Denham, Republican member of Congress, won by 8,000 votes. Stephen Knight, won by 16,000 votes, both of those in 2016. And the poster boy for this is Daryl Issa. Daryl Issa is the most important of the people that are going to be targeted, who are Republican congressional candidates who are running for re-election. His last election, he won by 1,500 votes. Mm. So he's really got a target on his back. Now, there'll be several others. Now, that's just California. Upstate New York has some as well. And other states that are relatively high taxed, if you're in a Republican district that is a little more marginal, you're going to in for a fight on your hands. So I'm not suggesting that, as some people would at this point, that Democrats will take over the House of Representatives, but it looks a lot more like that than it did 24 hours ago.
Mm-hmm. It's astounding. I still can't get over that Doug Moore, that Doug Jones actually won. So so there's targets on people's backs, and I'm curious, what other, as a strategist, what other things should we consider? So, for example, you've talked about the House, and as a strategist, you're saying that if and when this tax reform gets passed, and the state and local taxes are not deductible, is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Deductible. Then, you know, that's going to hurt Republicans it's going to hurt everybody in New York and in California, and so that's why you would target those certain people. I'm curious about how you would, in the House, I'm curious how you would look at the Senate and think strategically if you were a Democrat or a Republican.
Okay, the Senate will have either 25 or 26 Democratic seats that are going to be contested in 2018. It's going to depend on what happens in Minnesota. But of those, we'll call it 25, of those 25 seats that Democrats are defending in the U.S. Senate in 2018, 10 of them were states in which Donald Trump won.
Mm.
Now, they're disproportionately states that run along the Canada-U.S. border from Montana to Pennsylvania. Okay. Now, I don't know how well that the Democratic candidates will do there because they're running for re-election. So they've won. They've won before, but Donald Trump has won there before and most recently. I think it's going to be difficult for the Democratic Party to sweep them all. But funny things happen. Now, for the Republicans, there's right now 2 states that are really going to be targeted, and as of this last week, possibly a third one, meaning Tennessee. Okay, one of the states is Arizona. The U.S. Senator from Arizona has saw the writing on the wall, and he decided to retire. The state of Arizona is turning more and more towards purple. It's gone from a red state to a vaguely red state and pushing towards purple. In Arizona, a congressional representative named Kyrsten Sinema is apparently going to be the nominee. And she is politically such that she could be elected there. The Republicans have good reason to be afraid of that. In Nevada, The incumbent U.S. senator, the fellow named Heckler, is he's on pretty thin ice as well. He may not even win his primary. In addition, Nevada is one of those places that's even closer to moving towards purple than it is Arizona.
Huh.
It was 20 years ago, Nevada was a dependably Republican state. And today's world, it's pick 'em. You know, anybody can win there. So that's two Republican seats that are going to be heavily contested. Now, this last week in Tennessee, the last Democrat to win statewide in Tennessee was the governor of the state, a fellow named Phil Breland. Governor Breland has decided he wants to run for the U.S. Senate there. He was a popular person while he was governor of Tennessee, and we'll see what happens. But what I'm saying is the chances, I think, just my own observation of this, and it's way before Election Day, is there's a chance for the Democratic Party to take over the Senate, but I wouldn't bet my money on it. But within this last week, I told somebody don't bet on Jones either.
Yeah, I don't think anybody did. I wish I had.
There were a few, but it's close races. You just kind of depend on what has happened is probably what will happen.
And Mike Hawkins, I know that you are. I know you have to be someplace. I've already taken up a lot of your time. Okay, so we do have a couple more minutes. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue. We have an extended hour because, I don't know, we got lucky, and maybe because the election in Alabama was so surprising that we need extra time to work this one through. So, Mike Hawkins, as we were trying to end by 7 o'clock, I said, what are the lessons learned? And now that we do have a couple more minutes, I don't want to ask you to summarize in 4 seconds, but we can actually do a full summary. What are the lessons to learn, lessons to be learned in the past year as we move into the midterm election?
The last year is taught Americans that they're really unhappy with the personality of this president, and it's rubbed off on Republicans down ballot. His popularity is 32% now, and if you're not a Republican, you know, it's maybe in the single digits, maybe it's 8 or something if you're not a Republican. And he doesn't seem to be behaving in such a way where he's going to try to expand this coalition. The coalition is shrinking, and Democrats can smell blood in the water. And I would assume this next year that Democratic candidates who will be running for statewide office or even local legislative offices will be of better quality and better financed. Why? Because good quality candidates tend to know when it's a good year to run, whichever party they are, and they tend to jump in. So I'm not suggesting that it's going to happen every place, but places that congressional districts or state districts or legislative districts that are sort of purple, like the ones that I just mentioned just in California, they could be more competitive than usual. And, who knows? You know, the world is always changing in a political sense, and also, you got to see the changing demographics of the voters. In the next, between this last presidential election and the next presidential election, 2020, 12 million Americans will become of voting age. Of those 12 million Americans, I have been told recently, I don't know if this is true, but if it's close enough to debate, you get the idea. Of those 12 million, 2 out of 3 are of color. I don't know if that's true. Maybe it's less than that. But the fact that we even have to discuss it suggests that makes the Republican Party's problem with young people who turn out in relatively small numbers. I'm not unmindful of that.
Right.
In addition, over that 4-year period, a bigger percentage of the Republicans' base are going to die off because they tend to be white and older. So, you know, it's demographically, it's a ticking time bomb.
Right.
And you've really seen that change in, I'll pick out a few states where it's really changed. Let's start with California. California was a dependably Democratic state in presidential elections until 1992. Prior to that, it was chalk it up for the Republicans. After this, it probably won't happen in the lifetime of every kid in local high schools.
Right.
So those days are probably gone. Nevada is pushing that direction. Colorado is pushing that direction. It'll be a while, but Arizona, I would think, in time that's going to happen. But there is a reverse, too. West Virginia used to be just a dependably Democratic, and now it's dependably Republican, and it changed very, very quickly. But West Virginia is a shrinking population. I think they have 5 electoral votes. California has 55.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, demographics is the name of the game. You know, whether you're running a hot dog stand or whether you're in politics or, you know, whatever you do.
But Mike Hawkins, I learned not too long ago that California is moving its primary election. And I have heard, I really should have followed up on it, but since I have you in the studio, I'll let you correct me if I'm wrong, is that California will be voting during Super Tuesday for presidential primary races.
I don't know. Huh. I don't know that that's been nailed down.
Okay.
We always talk about making it part of Super Tuesday, but if it is part of Super Tuesday, that diminishes the importance of other states. Because California is an eighth of the United States population.
Which I think that's why we should go earlier.
Well, everyone wants to go earlier, and the tendency has been for people to go earlier and earlier and earlier. Historically, California was the first Tuesday after the first Monday in June. Well, except for one election that comes to my mind, it didn't make any difference after that. We were an afterthought because the decision had been decided. In recent years, we pushed it up a little earlier and kind of more mainstreamish. But, you know, I don't know, but every state wants to be early.
But we are the biggest.
Clearly.
So instead of looking at it from the perspective of then California participation would diminish the influence of the smaller states, I feel like, yeah, we're so big, we should have more influence.
Of other states that would be on Super Tuesday, let's say there's 8 or 10 of them or
so
12
So you're okay with us going early, you just don't think we should do it on Super Tuesday?
No, I don't have a viewpoint to express on the matter. I'm just saying that if California becomes part of Super Tuesday, it becomes California plus some also-rans. And I'm not sure the also-rans would want that to be the case. Right now, the early states are New Hampshire, which has historically been the case, and Iowa, which has historically been the case, and then...
South Carolina.
Is it South Carolina?
Yep, Carolina's third.
And Nevada. Spread out all over the country, but these things constantly change, and they're matters of the state legislature or of the voters in the respective states. So, you know, I don't know, but as much as being a Californian as I am, I would love to see my state have more influence. I don't know how the rest of the country would feel that. Remember, there's some jealousy towards the behemoth on the Pacific Coast by the rest of the country, and you know, why wouldn't there be? There's 39 million of us.
Yeah.
You know, 39 million people is, what's that? Probably the 15 smallest states don't equal 39 million.
Yeah, well, politics is a dirty business, as we've established. I'm okay elbowing our way to Super Tuesday.
Good. You'll be better if you're willing to do some elbowing.
Mike Hawkins, here is my last question, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
Is, you know, one, I think one, as you and Diana Dwyer and I were talking before the show, this idea about people, you know, I've heard again and again and again over the last year is I didn't vote in the last election because I didn't like my choices. And I don't have a lot of patience for that is because we have a two-party system. I mean, you might want a third party, but a third party is not going to win any substantial power. And so what do you say to people that say, you know, I think we should have a third party, or I want to be involved in the next election, even just to learn about it? How do people get involved?
I'd say if life is unpleasant between the choices you have, pick the one you find less unappealing than the other. In addition, we talk about third parties for generation. What is the name of the last political party that has become institutionalized? That is, it was created and then it was passed on from generation to generation. What is their name?
The Democratic Party.
The Republicans.
The Republicans! I was a 50-50 guess.
And they were born in 1854. My point is we've had dozens of third parties since then. What tends to happen with third parties is their candidate appeals votes away from the major candidate who is ideologically closer to them. It's not philosophy, it's just math.
It's just math. So I guess your suggestion is, if you're a Democrat, what I say actually is, if you're a Democrat and you're mad about the choice, go walk towards the party to change it, not away from it. If you're a Republican and you don't like your choice, walk towards the party so you can change it and not away from it. Get more involved, not less involved.
Philosophically, that makes sense. But for the person who holds that view, a plague on both their houses, they don't hear that. But in some states, it doesn't matter. If you're fed up with both political parties in California and you're going to vote for the third wave, whatever that is, you can get by with it in California. If you're in Nevada, it's not the smart thing to do because your vote counts in Nevada because it could go either way.
Right.
But people with that viewpoint are more interested in satisfying their emotional needs rather than political needs. Politics involves a lot of emotions, just like love and business and everything else.
It's hard being human sometimes, isn't it?
I don't know what my option is. It's all I've ever been.
Mike Hoggins, as always, thank you for enlightening me and for listeners about how to interpret what's going on. It's always a pretty interesting conversation with you.
Thank you, Sue. I always enjoy being with you and being on your program. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Right on. Thanks, Mike. All right. This brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue. But we are bleeding into Music Mayhem, which is, this hour is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFI supporters and by Chico Paper Company, a family-owned cornerstone of downtown Chico for over 40 years. Located at 4th and Broadway, Chico Paper Company features an on-site custom framing studio and art gallery showing the largest selection of local and regional artists. Chico Paper Company can be reached by calling 891-0900, or you can find them on the web at chicopapercompany.com. We have just a few more minutes until Brenton with Radio Radix comes up. I got a few good political songs that I got from suggestions from Facebook, so I'm always happy to hear those. We'll be back next time, same channel, same time, all of that stuff. Until next time, peace out.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. I'm able to carry on.
eyes at me. Here comes Rasta.